Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. Today, we're joined by Christopher Adams from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty well around here. We're finally getting a little rain the last few days, so can't complain about that.
Well, the issue with the rain, did it come a little late? I mean, I think it would have been a little nicer if it was about a month ago, wouldn't it?
Yeah, everything was pretty much mature. It definitely helped the sugar beets. That they'll suck that up right away. But in regards to the beans and the wheat, those were, you know, too far along.
Yep. So, well, why don't we always like to start off with just sort of your background as far as the farming, maybe where you went to college. I know that you had a unique, you were actually, I think, thinking about becoming a dentist and then decided to come back to the farm. So let's just go through a discussion of your history.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm born and raised here in Grand Forks. I'd be the fourth generation farmer on the farm here this generation. So that's exciting. Yeah, I went to the University of North Dakota on a biology pre-health degree because I was planning on going to dental school or at least having the option to go for a backup plan. I met my wife at the university as well, and she's kind of the main reason why I stopped the dental school plan and started farming. So it's kind of a unique situation there, but that was, let's see, I graduated from UND about 2009, I believe. So that's when I started farming on my own.
Okay. It's sort of interesting when I got married, you know, because I got married when I was 22, I was thinking, do I want to go back to the farm? My dad actually was coaching me not to go back to the farm. He thought it was great. I was going to become a CPA. And I sort of asked my wife, do you want to be married to a farmer or do you want to be married to a CPA? And at that time, she said, I want nothing to do with farming. You know, she was a city girl and said, no, I don't want anything to do with farming. Well, now she's a farm girl. You know, she's got goats and chickens and we're on 200 acres and she would never go back to the city. So it's just funny how things evolve over time. So,
yeah, my wife from the city too. And, you know, she didn't even know whether she wanted to marry a farmer or not. Her idea of a farmer was green acres.
Exactly.
You know, so and animals and everything like that. So she didn't really know. And, in hindsight, obviously there's variables involved there. But at this point in our lives, I could probably be doing dentistry and farming at the same time.
Yep.
But
yep.
To get here in the farm would have been a different story. But just where we are sitting now, it seems like that would have been a nice option.
Well, then so you started farming in about 2009. Let's go through what does the farm look like now? How is it managed? What are you growing and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so right now the farm is around 9,000 acres and that, you know, that's variable every year. My dad and I merged our farms in 2017, I believe. So now we're just one family farm. And the reason for that, which we'll get into later, is probably, building up a little equity on my own side to bring into the farm. So that's kind of how that whole thing started. But right now, yeah, we're close to 9,000 acres, primarily specialty crop. We do spring wheat, which is more rotational. This year it's actually going to be a cash crop, so that's nice to hear once in a while. You know, we do sugar beets, a lot of different varieties of dry beans, and hemp. And throughout the years, it depends on the year, we raise some certified seed for wheat and soybeans once in a while. We throw that into the mix a little bit too.
Now you mentioned hemp. Is that hemp for seed? Is it for CBD? What type of hemp are you growing?
Yeah, well, primarily our goal right now is just for the grain and fiber side. Of course, I've been doing hemp since 2016, So I went through the whole cannabinoid phase, and you know, if you talk to other people, how that whole thing turned out. So
yeah, it's I remember you know, as a CPA, I had several of my clients, you know, when the 18 Farm Bill came out, and it was sort of, hey, they opened it to you know, basically any farmer could grow hemp, and you know, they would ask me, and I go, you know, farmers have a history of driving excess profits out of any commodity faster than anybody on the face of the earth. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, so I think most of right. them either did a very small, you know, a small plot just to see if it made sense, or they just didn't do it at all. So now, as you had mentioned, you're sort of specializing in those dry beans. You know, out in my neck of the woods, you know, Columbia Basin certainly grows some dry beans. Where I live right now, we don't grow any dry beans just because of our other rotation. But what led you to sort of specialize in that? And how was that process? How difficult was it to get into more of that specializing? How did you develop the market and so on?
Well, you know, I have to say it was my grandpa and my dad kind of, you know, they obviously were the start of it. I don't even know, 30 years ago or more. So my dad would say he started some of the specialty edible beans because of the prices, because, you know, navy beans and black beans are kind of a commodity based dry bean, you know? So he liked to branch out a little bit because the money was better on those specialty ones, specifically cranberry beans. That's kind of his bread and butter. And they've generally been very good for us over the last 25, 30 years. And, you know, over the last eight, probably the industry got a little flooded with those. So it kind of came back down to earth. And this year is now kind of inflating up again. So it's very cyclical, very difficult to market them and keep tabs on what the market's going to do because it's such a small market. So really why we got into them is, well, they were on the farm when I started. So that's kind of my introduction to them. And since then we've branched out and did a couple, you know, more specialty projects with yellow kidney beans and stuff like that, that normally people don't see around here.
Now, when you are in that farming those beans, do you just simply farm and then transfer them over to, you know, a middleman that then is going to then send them on to the end user? Or are you sending any directly to the end user after cleaning them? Or what process are you doing right there?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we do a lot of exporting. So we have our own processing facility where we'll take our beans in, clean them, bag them, export them to whatever country it is. I think we're up to 13 countries right now. But that's primarily our cranberry beans and some kidney beans. For the rest, we actually diversify a little bit and we try to hit the domestic market with those. So instead of us directly marketing it, we pool up with about 12 other growers and hire a marketing firm out of Michigan that handles the domestic sales there and mostly canning. So it kind of alleviates some of the risk on our end doing it that way.
So 13 countries, is there any one particular or a couple countries that primarily are your key export markets, or is it just depend on the year and the demand?
Well, if I were to say primary, it would be South America. Several countries in South America, I've built some pretty good relationships there. That was the first couple countries that I shipped product to. So I'd say primarily South America, but I've shipped a lot of other places, and now the demand is coming back up again. So those might venture out even further.
And when you're, you know, where you're involved in shipping products overseas, are you getting some type of letter of credit, or how are you mitigating that risk of getting paid?
Well, you know, letter of credits don't really hold much water from an international business standpoint.
Yep.
You know, so where we are now, a lot of the businesses we work with, it's a good relationship. So pretty much when the contract's signed, documents are printed off and copies of them, they'll just wire the money 100%.
Oh.
Now, in certain cases, with, you know, new companies, there's a few different things we could do, and there's cash against documents. So there'll be a third party involved where they hold the documents and the money. And when the documents get there, they'll release the money to us. And that's a good protection strategy there. There is insurance offered through Ex-Im Bank for cargo. We don't really partake in much of that because it doesn't really take effect until almost 6 months after the whole bill is supposed to be due. So it takes time, but it's a 90, it's like 98% coverage. So it's pretty good coverage.
Okay.
You know, the payments hasn't really been the problem. The problem that you run into more is market volatility. So for instance, when we loaded beans into a container or a rail car here, sometimes it takes 25 to 30 location. So in that 25 or 30 days, if the market goes from just say $40 to $30, what's to say there's something wrong with that cargo all of a sudden?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where they can back out of it and then try to renegotiate to take it because something might be wrong. Because then now they have us. We are shipping to get it there.
Of course, if it goes from 40 to 50, they're very gladly pay the 40, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. So yeah. It's that's the tough part. And again, we've been pretty fortunate so far. We haven't had many hiccups in that regard.
I'm just curious, you know, as a CPA, and of course, yes. Well, actually, on Tuesday, I was in Grand Forks speaking to a bunch of CPAs. You know, there is a tax incentive called ICDISC, Interest Charge Domestic International Sales Corporation. I'm just wondering, I don't know. I mean, we didn't discuss this beforehand, but do you happen to take advantage of that? Or are you aware of the fact that there is some tax advantages by using that?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't know if we do or not. That'd probably be a good question for our CPA.
Okay.
But honestly, I don't think I've even heard of it.
Okay. Well, what it does is it converts ordinary income into capital gains. Now, if Biden gets his way and, you know, there's major tax law changes, maybe it's not as beneficial. Also, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, it's gotten less value. And you probably need to have, you know, that million or more of international revenue or international sales. So, you know, I'm not sure if you're up that high with your bean sales going overseas or not.
Yeah, I think we should be. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, something, just run it by your CPA the next time you talk to them and see if that's something that's available. So, yeah, it's very interesting how specialty crops, if you can develop that relationship, you can develop that market. You know, we certainly have several clients in our firm that have a specialty niche, and they're very, very profitable, and they've been profitable for many, many years. So in certain types of seed, alfalfa, carrot, dill, you know, all those type of seeds, as long as the market continues to be profitable, you know, our clients are going to be profitable. So, you know, that's sort of the side of the farming side on the beans. I guess, you know, I would like to maybe be a little bit more general as far as what was the growth of the farm? Maybe what you or your dad did right, maybe what you did wrong. If there's something you might look back and say, hey, I wish we'd done something different.
Well, you know, in regards to the growth of the farm, I obviously we didn't do everything perfect the first round, but I can't really pinpoint something that we do different there, because the growth of the farm for us, it goes hand in hand with, you know, the number of acres because of our dry bean potential. I know with growth of farms, it kind of comes down to, you know, the bottom line and profitability, which we try to do the best we can at. But if we want to grow the export side of it, we have to produce more beans. Because our goal is to be, you know, a one-stop shop necessarily. We don't really want to be a middleman for other people. If a client needs something that we don't have, then I'll kind of line up a buyer and a seller and just facilitate it that way. So again, with us growing, it's the number of acres, and that has its downside too, because beggars can't be choosers. So you don't get the best ground. And if you do, you have to pay for it. So our land cost is pretty substantial. And again, with specialty crops, you know, we have to, or especially edibles, we have to do 4 trips through harvest to manage them. We have to desiccate them. We have to knife them. We have to windrow them, and we have to combine them. And that's a lot of labor, a lot of specialty equipment. So our labor bill is rather high as well, higher than it needs to be. So that poses some cash flow issues on these down years like we've had the last, you know, 5-6 years. So in regards to the export market, the growth there actually comes from the sales side, the relationships. You know, we sell pretty much everything that we raise now, but it isn't that much in regards to the actual export markets. You know, these companies buy hundreds of containers a year. Yep. From multiple people. So, you know, we're just small apples compared to a lot of those large companies. So our growth comes from meeting new buyers and potentially growing something different than everybody else, which entails me to go on a lot of trips away from our family, which is difficult for us. So that's a hard navigation, or hard to navigate that area. But we're doing it. And back to the growth of the farm, you know, I think if we look back in the mid 2000s, which, you know, I was pretty young then, so I was just an employee at the time. You know, the amount of money being made in the area in those 10 years was astronomical.
Yep.
So, and prices of equipment, like you could trade your new equipment the next year and get more for it than you paid for it. Mm-hmm. Used. You know, so you get into a routine where you're constantly trading for new equipment and trying to get your tax liabilities down, and then you get into some not so good years, and now you're stuck with all your cash tied up in equipment that you know, you could get by with less.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it hit us, you know, and this has been several years, but, you know, we have a $1 million shop that we need for a reason. So buying new equipment just didn't make much sense. So we have a lot of freed up cash, or non-freed up cash, tied up in a bunch of newer equipment that we don't really need. So, you know, if I were to do it over again, I would have just stuck with the bare bones, you know, fix it if we break it, buy it if it doesn't run, or, you know, replace as needed kind of thing. Take in the tax liability, put the cash away, and had a little nice little nest egg for, you know, times like we're in now. 2019 was a killer for our area, and we're still managing to figure out a way to pay back the inventory notes that we have on from that year alone.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so, I know the sugar beets in 19 were not good. You know, depending you know, what cooperative you dealt with and so on. It was a very tough time. And one of my favorite sayings is that working capital that you've paid tax on is your working capital. Working capital that you haven't paid tax on is either the bank's or Uncle Sam's. So, exactly. You know, even though you've had to pay that tax, it is, you're in control of that working capital. Whereas the opposite is also true. I'm just sort of curious, you know, for a lot of our listeners out there, you know, they're used to maybe growing corn and beans and wheat, which is, you know, very simple. I shouldn't say simple equipment. Right. It's expensive equipment. But so on your beans, you didn't have to spray them to get them to die down or dry down. Is that correct? Is that sort of the first process?
Yes. And yes, that is, we don't have to probably, but it makes our lives a lot easier as far as, you know, kind of leveling the playing field with the green ones versus the ripe ones. And it just kind of levels it all out nicely.
And then you use the term knife. So what do you mean by knifing them?
So a knifer is pretty much a long toolbar like you would, like a planter would be, just the toolbar. And then they have 4-foot knives on them, like you would expect a knife, just 4-foot knives in, I don't know what degree angle, maybe a 30 degree acute angle or something. So they're pointy and there's two on each side. So essentially what you're doing is you're driving down the rows. Those knives go under the soil just about an inch or so and slice off the beans above the roots.
Okay.
And then and then the beans just fall over on each other. Like they consolidate 24 rows into 12, essentially. They just fall into each other. And that's a good desiccation process too. You could probably get by with just doing that, and they can sit in the field like that for longer and they don't blow away, and they don't, even if it rains on them, it's okay. But the point of that is to get dirt off. You know, if you use the one stepper, which is the machine that windrows those into one swath, you pull up the roots and the dirt comes with it. So then you have dirt in with the beans, which is makes it really difficult to clean out. So the knifing step is to cut the beans off above the roots so you don't have to deal with the dirt.
And then your next process, you windrow them, is that with just a rake, or are you actually doing some type of a swather, or
that's with a picket one step. So essentially what that is, and you can use this piece of equipment without knifing it first. And what it is, it's essentially, it has a pickup head on it, like baler or whatever you want to say. It just has the nice slow tines coming up in it.
Yep.
But in the front of that are bars. There's like a inch by inch square bar, solid square iron that goes underground about, you know, a couple inches. So it just, and it keeps spinning. So pretty much goes underground and pushes the plant up and kind of breaks it out of the ground. And then the pickup head picks him up. And then you just have belts in the back that put it into a windrow.
Okay. And then on your combining, when you're combining, you're still using a regular combine, but it has a pickup reel instead of a header. Is that the process that you use at that point?
No, we only use our conventional combines on the smaller beans we raise. Like when we do blacks, navies, or pinks, we'll just use that with a straight head on it, and we'll flex them off right at the ground.
Oh, okay.
But on the more specialty ones, the bigger ones that we do, we have to knife them, one step them, and we have picket combines that pick them up. And those are pole type combines, same kind of combines they use for peanuts and that kind of a thing. So it's a really simplified version of a combine. 200, the cylinders is only moving at 200 RPM.
Yep.
So it's really slow, not a whole lot of banging around, and there's sieves that are built into it for, you know, getting pods out of it and stuff. So, and there's no augers. It's all dump form. So it comes into the hopper, the whole hopper lifts up and dumps out into a truck.
Yep. Yes. Sort of like out in our area, we had green pea combines, similar type thing. And then of course we have garbs out there, our chickpeas, garbanzos, where you use a header. And of course I'm old enough. I'm probably your dad's age or close to it. Back in my day when we were harvesting wheat and then we'd switch over to dry peas, you know, that was almost a full day. It wasn't quite a full day process because you had to take right. off, you know, a big old pulley yep. and put on a smaller one and drive that cylinder from 900 RPM down to, like you say, 200 RPM. So now it's just a flip of the switch when you go from weed or garbs and so on. So
yeah, pretty well, much or concaves. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that was interesting. Like I say, I'm guessing most of our listeners out there probably are used to, like I say, harvesting corn or wheat or soybeans, where it's just simply a combine. You go through the field and it's one pass. Here you got four passes. So yeah, that is quite a bit more labor and cost associated with those specialty beans. So,
right.
You know, right now we're going to go ahead and just take a quick break for a sponsor message. So again, this is the Farm CPA presented by Top Producer, and we'll be back here in a second to continue the conversation.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome everyone back to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. This is your moderator, Paul Niefer, and we're going to continue our conversation with Chris Adams from North Dakota. So, you know, and we're getting close to the end of the podcast here, Chris, but on succession planning, it sounded like, again, you're the fourth generation. You know, it would have gone from your grandfather to your father. It sort of has gone from your father to you in a little bit. I mean, you've joined the operations, you're building up that equity and so on. I know you have very young kids. Do you have any thoughts on how you may bring your kids in, or if you even know whether your kids are going to be interested in becoming a farmer?
Well, they all are interested at it right now, of course. But you know, the oldest one is 7 and she doesn't know what she wants to be completely yet, but I have ideas on how I would manage that. And, you know, obviously by that time, a whole bunch of things are going to change, but the one thing that won't, and it was, you know, what I didn't do is they have to go out and get a different job.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, and a degree in a different job, and whether it's CPA or an attorney or something, even unrelated to farming, even a tech degree, doesn't matter, but they have to go out, work hard on their own, get something that they've done on their own. And then if they're interested in coming back to the farm, then we'll do it that way, because that's the biggest downfall of mine is I never did that. And I really wish I would have.
Yep. I totally agree. Totally agree. And then, you know, since I am a CPA, we know that there's been a lot of discussion in Congress about major tax changes coming down the road. And some of them are very drastic on the farm side. Is there any of those that you've heard that you say, man, I wish those wouldn't happen? Or is there some that it's sort of like, well, we'll deal with it when it happens? I'm just curious what your thoughts on those changes might be.
Well, you know, with the capital gains changes, that's a big one. The gifting allotment, if that shrinks down, that's a big one and concerning, because we haven't really utilized a whole much of that yet.
Yep.
You know, my dad is very much involved still in the farm. So, yeah, that's going to be some interesting waters to navigate if that comes through. It's always scary. It does. If it's not this, it's another thing every year. So, you know, I don't know. I kind of don't educate myself too thoroughly on that side of it, because we pay somebody else to do it. So,
yeah. Well, you know. And I think, you know, the issue right now is it is the uncertainty that's causing the angst.
Yes.
for our,
right.
You know, or listeners out there, for my clients that I deal with, is, you know, they'll call up and they'll want advice. And when our advice is, don't do anything stupid right now, don't do anything, be prepared. But there's nothing we can really tell you to do, because anything we tell you to do, Congress may completely wipe out the benefit of us doing that. And if it's irrevocable, then you know, we're back to, well, now we got to sort of try to unwind this, and we don't want to be in that position. So, you know, I think, you know, I've had another podcast earlier this morning, and I'd mentioned on there the fact that business really over time, if Congress goes too far one way with tax rules, business will push them back to a moderate or a moderation.
Right.
So I think even if they go too far one way on this, it'll come back to where it's not as bad as what we might think it might be right now. So we'll just see what happens. And then, you know, we're getting close to the end of the podcast here. I'm just curious, is there something that keeps you up at night that you sort of mull on or you're worried about? I'm just curious what that might be.
Well, yes. And most of it is the health of the farm. You know, like I said, we've been getting beat up on 2019 pretty bad. And then the following year was just an average year. And those of us that farm know that average years are the worst years to have, because you have zero insurance benefit off of it. And, you know, that's not the best type of situation. So we, you know, we're definitely in a hole that we've been digging out of, and we will dig out of it. But it's concerning. It's with all the unknowns, and especially the extra dry year we had this year. That's been on all of our minds here, because, you know, we had 4 inches of rain since, well, the first of the year, pretty much, because we didn't have any snow hardly. I think, you know, we do snow removal too, and I think we went out 4 times all year.
Usually
we go out 25 times all year. So we haven't had considerable moisture at all since 2 Julys ago.
Yeah.
And finally, we've been getting a couple inches in the last 2 weeks. So it's nice, but it's definitely been dry.
Yeah. No, as I said at the beginning, I share your pain. Our last big drought was 1977, and talking to people that went through that, they're a firm believer that this drought is even worse than that one. So we're probably easily 40% below normal out in our area. So, and then last, I always like to end our recording with what is your definition of success in farming? Now, you're younger, you're in the beginning parts of the career, so it's going to be a little different than somebody maybe my age. So I'm just curious what your definition is.
Oh, the best balance sheet ever. I want to be the richest person on earth. No. In my opinion, my definition of success in farming is to be able to pass it on to a successor in a better form than it was before I had it.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's really the only way I can say it. My excitement in the farm isn't the balance sheet at all. It's being able to pass it down and having that, you know, be a legacy for many generations. That's kind of what excites me about it.
Now, that's a good definition. I like that definition. So, you know, with that, we're going to go ahead and in today's podcast, you know, probably maybe a year or so from now, I'll probably contact you again and see how things have changed. Like you said, you know, you're getting a little moisture. We know the pricing is better. Certainly spring wheat pricing is certainly better this year. We grow a fair amount of spring wheat out in our area. Actually, believe it or not, our soft white wheat, which is normally less price than the spring wheat, is now a higher price because of the fact that, I mean, we're getting in our area, I think yesterday when I looked at the pricing, it was $10.60. So we're getting $10.60 per bushel. Now there is some discount because that's Portland price.
Right.
But if you have a good, if you have what we call a good basis, because you have lower protein, you're actually getting over $10.60. So,
right. Yeah. And we're the opposite. We're going to start getting docked on high protein.
Yep. And that's, And we're all getting docked on high protein out there because of the drought. You know, that protein gets driven up when you have a drought situation. So again, Chris, thank you very much. And we'll look forward to having another podcast sometime in the future.
Alrighty. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. I'm Paul Niefer, and we'll be back next week with a new episode of the Farm CPA podcast with Top Producer.